Station number 16722, Captain George Ledger, Reel 4.
Captain Ledger, Reel 4. After being on a route march of quite a number of miles, as you've mentioned, was it part of the drill for your feet to be examined at the end of it?
It was one of the most important parts of the route march, to my way of thinking. Because after you've been marching 30 miles, well, you weren't marching as such as marching, you had walking in broken step. But after walking 30 miles, that you had to have your feet attended to, and I was pleased that that did happen. After every route march I took part in, everyone, right throughout the war, I never went to a route march without my feet were examined. That's before I was commissioned. But when I was in the ranks, I always had my feet examined when I was in the ranks by an officer, and he used to come along religiously. And he used to have his little stick, just touch your toes, you know, and scrape it, just rub it against them. How are you feeling? And he used to ask how you were. Give them the due. They always seem to be asking after your welfare, these officers who were in charge of you. After each route march, I think it was drilled into those officers to make sure that the men weren't injured or suffering from the illness of the walk, or any injuries they may have, because let's face it, that it does happen. Normal walking with everyday life. But for to march 30 miles and heavy boots and keep to a time schedule, it's a stress, not only the weight of your body which is on your leg, it's the stress and the mental activity. And that's what I used to like about some of our officers. They used to ask you how you felt, not just how your feet were, you used to ask, and how do you feel yourself, Ledger, they used to say, you know, which was I thought was good, because then you could turn around and you'd say, well, I'm a bit fed up with marching, or I'm quite well, thank you, sir, you know, that's how I used to think of it.
Who was your company commander when you started?
My company commander was Captain Clark, but it changed that many times within a short period, just a matter of weeks. Within months, from one to the other, there was a Captain Burriff, a Captain Clark, and a Captain Dixon. You know, Captain Dixon was a very, very nice chap, well respected, but a real Captain Dixon. A man, when he gave his instructions, he never veered from them, never changed his mind. He says, that's what I want and that's what I'm going to get. Very keen. But he thought a lot about his men, Captain Dixon. I'm not saying the others didn't mind, but to my feeling, I had a lot of dealing with Captain Dixon, because I used to be in his office at various times as his clerk, and I used to know something of the inside of his feelings. You know, you get to know people's feelings when you're actually close to them, which you have to keep yourself, naturally, haven't you? But he was one of the most religious, not in the sense of church, he was strict, religiously strict, you know, about, he didn't hum and haw what he said, he wasn't nasty with it. When he said it, everybody knew he meant it. Oh yes, Captain Dixon, a nice fellow, him. And that's the way he used to talk to him, and that's the way it went. Nice chap.
What was the background of these officers?
Well, to my mind, coming back from working class, I'm working class, come back from the mines and there's a colliery joiner. When you first entered the forces, when you met these people, you used to look up to them with awe, you know, wondering, well, you hadn't been associated with their background, you see. And until such time as you got associated with where they came from, you were in the dark. So you had to make yourself move a little bit, or your mind move a little bit, to understand where they come from and the sort of life they had led, as opposed to your own. And that's what I did, you know, rather funny. I just sat back. I said, just give yourself a moment or two and just think, well, I've been with him today. I wonder what sort of life he had, you know. And the sort of first impressions, oh, well, the money folk, you know, they just got the ranks through being money folk and passed on from the fathers and such like, and the father's businesses and such. But actually, when he really got into it, it just wasn't so. A lot of wrong impressions were caused and actually accepted by the fact that the thought that, oh, he's just a money fool, that's how he got his commission. Far from the truth. Those lads, to me, those lads, I'm saying lads, those men, they might have been money folk, they were money folk, but they were doing a job which had been passed on to them by their own fathers, but they were still doing it on their own beliefs of what they felt in was right. You see, you've got your own feelings to think about. And perhaps when I'm talking to you, you know, Harry, you might think I'm bringing the church all the time, but that's always in the back of my mind. Wherever I speak, wherever I say, the church is it's the church speaking, in the way I've been brought up.
So they had a deep sense of responsibility?
They had a deep sense of responsibility. And we had quite a lot of experience with them at the beginning of the war when we left Birtley and went down to our first place of call. The first billet was down at Antstone in Charlton, Charlbury and around that area. And they used to get some of these little trips out, these officers, and people used to say, the lads, you know, in the ranks, they used to say, well, they're having a good time of it, aren't you? Look where they're doing the other day, where they've been, where they're going. And here I found out a lot of them were getting the back trouble because the officers were going away having a bit deer shooting, pig shooting, wild boar shooting down in the country. Well, there was nothing no harm in that, because they've been doing exactly what I found out later was what was asked to do by the owners of the land. If you've got any time, if you don't mind, could you come around and square this ground up for us, you know, and they used to take it as part of the training. And a lot of the lads there, like myself, used to think, well, oh, they're just out having a bit pot shot. But actually they were doing a good service for the people on whose land we were staying or billeted on.
Men didn't resent the officers.
But no, I never found any man, not to my face anyway, or not in my presence, and I was in 6 years, I never found to turn and resent anybody. There's none of the officers I was associated with ever did anything to cause my resentment, or any of the lads who was with me. You might have heard them say, because they're a bit fed up, oh, well, let him get on with it, and, you know, that's his affair, not ours. Which is the wrong way to take things, you know. He might just be a lance corporal, but he might save that officer's life, you know. You've got to think about that.
Coming up to the war, as you said, things obviously began to happen. Did it strike you at all that you were coming to a situation where you may have to kill someone or be killed? Or
well, yes, it did. And I didn't know which way to take it, because I'd already joined the TA and I had made myself felt that I was making myself available for the time, adapt myself to such a thought or a position in your mind of what I had to do. And when I had sworn myself in for the king and country, I knew what I had to do. And of course it goes against all the grain of the church is to kill people. And you know, it happened to me in France, the first time I went into action, and I was sick. I vomited my inside out, the first person I saw who I knew I had killed. And that was in when we first made an attack from Vimmeridge onto Arras, just before Dunkirk.
Yeah, I'm trying to explore.
I know we're getting a bit before my story.
We'll come to that, of course. I was just wanting to explore your own deep Christianity and another person, although a foreign person, Was there anything in your thinking or influence that the enemy wasn't Christian, or there was evil there?
Not at all, no. In my mind, I mean, we had read the news and we prepared for war coming for a long time. And we all had to think what we would do when it did happen. We were given plenty of warning it was going to happen. And to my mind, I never thought about any of the people who were going across were un-Christian. Not until such time as later on, and we realised some of them, the atrocities which had been perpetrated, which made us think differently. So that we had to accept it ourselves then. Not only me, I mean, the many hundreds and hundreds in the same position as me at the church. But I had to control my feelings, because it was rather difficult, and live with it. I wasn't a conscientious objector, because I had joined the territory of my own permission, with my father's push, of course. I could have refused, but then fell out with my father. But never mind, having done that, I had to do what I'd sort of swore to do when I took my oath, to do my duty to the king and the country. And the question of the church was, unfortunately, on certain occasions, pushed to the back. It had to be. It had to be kept in the back. But unfortunately, those things just don't stop at the back. Even when you're out fighting, it's at the front. And you're wondering.
Was there any influence in your thinking, and obviously your people around you, through what propaganda was trying to tell you about the Germans? You know, the Hun is evil and he's doing this. You know, it was coming through in the press and the media.
Well, we used to get a lot of this, Harry, when we were in action. You know, when we were waiting, not in action, actually, but waiting just behind before we went, and we were waiting. And all these stories came. I'm not saying the rumours, but all these stories used to come through about what was happening, and they were going to do this and that to the other. They were tearing the arms off and the legs off, and putting an eye out with a, you know, putting a bullet through them, and doing all these things. And I think I speak for the majority of my people who I was in the forces with. They just accepted such stories and just let it pass. They didn't dwell on them, and they didn't harm them. They didn't sort of go around and say, well, they did that, you know. If you don't, you better get back out the road or they'll do this to you. None of that. I never felt or I heard in my association with the chaps I was with. No, they were too busy, my lads and myself, we were too busy looking after our own skin for to worry about such stories as that. And the main thing was to go there and do what we were told and get back without being able to get back without being killed.
Looking again at what you had to go through when you first went into action, was the training that you were getting, although it was relatively short in your experience, was the training that you were getting prior to the war, did it really prepare you for what happened to you?
Well, it gave a good starting. It gave a good grounding. But all situations have to be different, and they've got to be dealt with differently. So that question really is one which has to be left unanswered, because you can't say what you're going to do in all situations. But having said that, the training prepares you for preparing for these instances and puts you in mind, well, I did that when I was training. Do you think I would do it this time, or would I do it the other way? So your mind's thinking all the time, and that training was invaluable, I would say. In fact, it brought your mind at least to get to one convincing point, you know.
Your parents, the war broke out, you were called up, basically on the 1st of September, you had to go to the drill hall. What was your parents' attitude? Were they afraid for you?
My parents were not afraid, as far as I knew, because my father was called up the same day as I was called up. There were four of us left that house together. My father, my eldest brother Tom, my next eldest Bob, and myself. And my mother never shed a tear, but she was bitterly, you know, upset, but she never cried in front of... She never cried at my... I didn't see her crying because we all left. And we all left together in the same day, same night. I returned from working, as I said earlier, by taking my tools away from Ravenathan Pit and putting it into a lady's house. On the Friday night, 4:30, I got back home, and there was my father, my brother, and my two brothers. Right, this is it. And that was the message I got. Listen to the news. And we all had to report to Birtley Drill Hall on the 1st of September, which was a Friday. And I was in Birtley Drill Hall. I finished work at 4:30. I was in Birtley Drill Hall at 6 o'clock on Friday. So I had no time just to get washed and changed, to say and to hug my mother, and, you know. And we didn't have time really to think how your mothers were thinking, feeling. Because the whole lot of the four of us were just in such a... well, you can imagine four people in one house. So you can imagine what your mother was feeling.
You went to the drill hall. What were you doing in those first few hours?
First few hours. We've been interviewed, checked in. As people were, I mean, they were all coming in dribs and drabs. Everybody just got the drill all sharp as they could. That was the instruction. Report immediately. Well, people live in different areas, so it didn't all arrive at the same time. So we just continued. It was Friday night ensued. People kept coming in and being recorded. And then they were getting settled down with a blanket and a pillow, and pushed into the drill hall and told where to lie down, find a way to... That's where you're going to stay tonight. And that's where we all stayed originally.
So you're lying on the floor?
On the floor.
What was the mood of the unit?
Over the moon? Just they were really pleased and relaxed. There's such a relaxed atmosphere. In Morg's exultation, I would imagine. You know, the feeling of, now's the time, lad. This is it. We're going. You know, because when you've got time to stop back and think, you have to wonder, are you doing the right thing? But now when it happens, you're there and you've got to do the right thing. And that, I think that was the feeling. Everybody was joy. There weren't no tears about it, you know. Nobody saying, oh, I wish I wasn't going there. No, just too pleased to get there. The TA, marvellous set of lads.
Had you had, as part of your... training time up to then, had you had the history of the regiment and its actions and activities explained to you and taught to you?
All my life. My father had been in since the First World War. He's seen, we lived it. The stories about the trenches in the First World War and the dead bodies which are hanging up in the trenches and packed up and such like, and the stories, and apart from that, my own feelings and things that happened to me with my father after the war, and find him in the bed in the hut in the garden when he was having nightmares about the war, going down with his breakfast. And my father's been in such a state, this is years after the war, his father's in such a state. Of course, with his illness, he had a lung transplant taken away. He had been gassed. And the life my father had in the garden, by yourself alone at nights, sleeping there, we used to feel sorry for him, you know. And many of the time we've gone down and found him in a nightmare, reliving a lot of the things he had done, or been faced with, which we could never repeat, or, you know, we could never understand fully. I mean, let's face it, you've got to be in action, you've got to take part in action and actually do it yourself, because before you can really feel what it's about.
You said you were Lance Corporal when the war started.
When the war started, and I was, I was private when the war started, and I enrolled on the Friday night, and the war broke out on the 3rd, that was on the Monday, and on the Monday I promoted to Lance Corporal. And then we were given sections, because they were making the company up into proper... Because it wasn't such a big company, you know, and everybody was called up together, you know, had to... And then ranks, people were promoted quicker to get the staff built up and the units built up.
what were you actually doing when Chamberlain made his announcement that morning?
That morning I was on the 25-yard range. We were practicing on the range in the drill hole. When I wasn't listening to it, actually, because when the word came in, because we were busy practicing the 2-2 rifles. And when the word all came into the drill hole, and everybody just yelled, just give a big shout, hooray. And I just thought, this is it, and that's... It was just... I can't understand or say the words, but the feeling of people who have been waiting for time and time, such a length of time, and that has actually happened, and now was the time to go, you know.
So you became a Lance Corporal that day, that night?
That, on the 3rd of September.
In what ways did your responsibilities then change?
Well, from a private soldier, I was a great rider. Lance Corporal, this stripe, a man with this stripe, goodness. My life didn't change very much because I had two brothers there. Who, one was a sergeant, and the other brother was a corporal. And they put me wise straight away. Now look, you've got the first stripe. Don't think that's God, that stripe. Don't forget, them other lads in there, just the same as you. And my brother told us that. And, I didn't need much telling, of course, because, I realised that at that time it was a case of making sections up and people had to be promoted.
And you were given a section?
I was an assistant to a section, because there was a corporal in charge of the section. And I was assistant to the corporals. When he was not there, I had to take over the section.
So what kind of things would you as a Lance Corporal be called upon to do?
Oh, give orders. The corporal would just say to me, bring the section across, tell him to go there, tell him to go there. And the corporal would say, he would give me orders. He wouldn't say to the lads himself, not unless his Lance Corporal wasn't there. His Lance Corporal wasn't there, he would tell the lads himself, well, I want you three across there. But the Lance Corporal was there, he would say to me, he would say, George, in our case, he's got the first names of Lance Corporals. And he's like, George, would you go across, send three lads across there, or two there, and or tell them to do what he wanted doing. And then, if anybody outside the section, they wouldn't call you George, like your pal, the corporal, you used to call each other the first name. If a corporal or a sergeant from the other section used to come in, you used to say, corporal, do you? You see, you used to address you by your rank. Corporal Ledger, do this. Corporal Ledger, do this. I didn't say Lance Corporal Ledger, do this. I say Corporal Ledger. That's how it worked.
It was pretty rapid promotion. Was there any jealousy amongst the chaps that you were with?
I had rapid promotion. When you come to think, I rose from a rank of nothing. The 1st of September, to the rank of a captain in 1944. You know.
Did you come across any jealousy on coming out of the ranks to Lance Corporal, getting this strike amongst people who were there?
Not really, no, none at all. I was still as friendly with them as a Lance Corporal as I was as a private, and we were all in first, even when you're a corporal. Just used to still, because... The family atmosphere was there with territorials. You know, you all come from the same street, more or less. And you knew each other. You drank with one another, you know. And your life was bound together. Your families, you knew one another that close as territorials. You just hadn't, there was no instinctiveness to be nasty about anybody getting on. If anybody was promoted when I was Lance Corporal and I thought somebody got made a corporal and that, might have thought, well, I should have been made a Lance Corporal instead of him. That sort of thing never seemed to register with me with any of these lads, the territories were that so closely knit. Now, in other regiments where people have come from different villages and they joined the regiments, the strangest to one another, you see, that, I suppose, could creep in. But where there's such closely knit mining places like ourselves, they were all for one another.
There was no bullying, anything like that?
No, not in the Durhams. We didn't take art and speak from the Durham like infantry. I know I'm only speaking about A Company, but I was involved with the whole battalion eventually. And I can speak for the DLI, there was none of this bullying. They were all mining fraternities, and they all stuck and fought for one another and stood by each other. Even when they weren't fighting, even when they were on leave in any of the foreign villages and such like, they were there, they all stuck together.
Mm. What was the attitude towards Territorial Army people prior to the war, before any war was being thought of? Were the civilians thinking it was toy soldiers or whatever? Was there a different attitude?
There was not a lot of it, but there was that feeling about. You got one or two. When you've been in a while, naturally the words come to you, you know, after you join it, came to me, not that I paid a lot of attention to it, but, they're just territorials, been on parade, the territorials are on parade, so the armistice days, you know, when there's armistice under on, well, the territory to them is just the territorials, what's up there now on that parade, you know, putting a wreath on, they're just territorials, you know.
Did that change when war broke out?
That thing changed completely, because I never heard of just territorial after that, because there was no territory, because there were all regular army then. The war broke on all countries.
You start, of course, as you say, you'd be a regular soldier. What was the pay of a lance corporal?
No, I think it went down. I think I'll have to go back a little bit to make myself a sergeant. And when I was a sergeant, I was on 6 and 6 pence. And the pay was in decreases like that down. I just can't tell you exactly how, I just can't remember now how much I used to get as a lance corporal. It was only coppers, but it was a corporal. And then when you got a lance sergeant, you were only a lance sergeant for 6 months, and you automatically became a full sergeant, you know, you went up. And then I got 6 and 6 pence a day for that.
So wars began, and you moved from the drill hall to the
Masonic Hall in Berkeley.
Masonic Hall, where you dug your trenches around, which you said earlier. Did the training then intensify?
No. We were just stationed in Berkeley Masonic Hall, just to make room for other people to come into the drill hall, to make that available for other people who've been called up. Other units, civilian units who were going to take over various jobs, and to make buildings available for these units, civil defence and such like. So we occupied the Masonic Hall in Berkeley, all of it with the exception of the temple upstairs. Now the temple upstairs was the Masonic temple. And that was locked up. It was just one large room where the Masonic and the Freemasons did the normal meetings. That was kept away from, it was locked up from us. We couldn't use it. The building itself, it never made itself to any training. You didn't have any space for it to do any training. You couldn't have any assault courses or any bayonet practice. There was no room outside. The trenches were dug just around the building. And there was no room for the cars and things to be parked even, to just see how small it was. So the practice of training didn't exist. It was just a matter of keeping in touch with up-to-date details of the procedure and getting ready for the move, which was preliminary to going down to the place down in the Midlands, way down in, so, and it happened to be our move first to go to Enston and Charlbury, Chip Norton in those areas.
Whilst you were in the hall, were you sleeping on the floor?
We're sleeping on the floor, and to this day.
How were they feeding you?
Feeding us. We had a kitchen outside, and we were fed outside. We had to go outside the hall, and they're fed outside during the war, on the battlefield, you know, outside kitchens. I had an outside kitchen outside the Masonic Hall. But of course, it was more improved than the one just on a battleground, you know, that had been on a building. It was well, it was properly constructed, you know,
and
clean.
And had your own company cooks?
Oh, yes, we had our own company cooks. We didn't have any people waiting on and serving on or dressed up. And, oh, no, they're soldiers, you know, territorials. Our own company cooks. We all cooked our own meals. They cooked the meals for us. Yes.
And army rations, what were you getting?
From the cooks themselves. Well, it used to, in the morning, it used to be one roll with a little bit of bacon in between, nothing else at all, and a cup of tea, a mug of tea, that was all, until dinner time. And then it didn't get very much better, and they weren't very good, the meals, really. Uh-huh.